On ABC Radio,
this is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Good morning. Welcome aboard to another episode of The Big Fish. On The Big Fish this morning, Nadia Taylor is a Sydney-based lawyer who's just obsessed with fishing. She loves throwing soft plastics and lures, bait fishing, fly fishing, any type of fishing, and is very excited that the Queensland border has just reopened with a big adventure planned for next month. We'll share that with you. That's our first cast on The Big Fish. Peter LeBlanc is a down-rigging pioneer and has a masterclass for you. Stinker has finally tracked down some evidence of the mythical kilo whiting, thanks to a listener in the ACT. And the Waymaster with a fishing report from the mid-North Coast and the North Coast for the rock, beach, estuary, freshwater and offshore scene. It's all coming up on The Big Fish. Nadia Taylor is reasonably new to fishing, but just loves it. And any chance she gets, she's fishing or planning a trip. And Nadia, you've got a big trip planned to Queensland now that we can cross that border. What's on the agenda later in the year for you?
Yes, well, Scott, I'm very, very excited because we're going to Lake Wanderoo. So hopefully chasing a big barra.
There are some monsters in there, barrel-shaped barra, lots of food, lots of weed beds. But sometimes they just don't feed, and other times they'll smash everything. So have you been doing a bit of research?
We have been. So we've been watching a lot of videos, having a look at sort of, you know, what's fishing at the moment, any sort of secret sort of tips and tricks people are using in terms of lure selection and everything like that. And, of course, we've got the casting plugs out and making sure that we can cast right into those sort of tricky sections where they'll be hanging out, hopefully.
Very, very exciting to catch those metre plus barramundi, and those ones in those impoundments are so girthy as well, aren't they? They're just beasts of things.
They are monsters. They almost don't look real because they're just so large. If I get onto one of those, I think that my excitement will be shaking.
Yeah,
I hope I can land one.
The surface takes too. If you're using those, I love those plastic frogs with the hidden hooks. They look dynamite on those big barra impoundments. You're going to take a good selection of surface presentations?
Absolutely. So you've got to make sure that you have options, right? So subsurface, of course, we'll take some some hard bodies and some, you know, some things that we can also that sort of sink and have bigger bibs on them, so we can cover all of the options and water sort of levels as well. And of course, some soft plastics, they're my favorite, so I have to take some of those.
Yeah, it's a pretty weedy impoundment, hence the impressive growth rate, so much food in there for them. Are you good on the weedless presentation? I guess some of the soft plastics, you can have those rigs where the hooks are embedded and those
Absolutely.
Those surface prods. I mean, that they're pretty clever, aren't they?
Oh, they're great. Especially when I did fish barra up north when I was doing the barra apprentice program. That was a big thing, was about making sure that we fish plastics weedless. And I can tell you, it's a whole bunch of fun when you sort of, you know, casting out on top of the lily pads, sort of just getting them to sort of drop down. It was a great thing. And of course, it has to be weedless. That's the biggest point. They don't get the snags.
Yeah, for sure. And you've done a fair bit of bass fishing, I believe. You've hit Glenbourne and some of the other bass impoundments. I don't think it'd be that much different.
Yes, no, it isn't. Absolutely, it's not. Like, we do different things, of course, with bass. It's a much more slower sort of style fishing than what I sometimes am used to. But it's so rewarding when you actually hook on. And I was very lucky to have to catch some bass and also some yellows as well with one of my friends who was also a mentor, Georgie Saunders. So I have to give her a shout out because she's put me onto the love of bass.
Yeah. I'm fishing Glenbourne in a couple of weeks, actually, with a group of mates. So looking forward to that. And it's absolutely chock-a-block full of water. And believe it or not, I don't know if they were legally stocked in there, but the yellow belly are self-sustaining now. And I think the Australian record yellow belly, something well over 30 pound, came out of Glenbourne Dam up the Hunter Valley. So catching one of those must be a great surprise when you're chasing bass.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I just love the shape of them. You know, you pull them up, you see the little football shape. And
they're amazing.
They're just an impressive.
And that lovely saffron belly, if you get one out of clear water or tannin-stained water, their colours can be quite remarkable. Yeah, it's a great fishery up the Hunter there. And all of these dams full of water now. Monduran the same?
Yeah, from my understanding, it is. So my understanding, they've had a sort of, you know, good sort of wet, so it's all sort of running back through. So I do believe the water's up. But if anybody else that knows anything else about that, please let us know.
Let Nadia know if you've fished Monduran and caught some barra. What are some of the tips? I think you need to be a bit fanatical because it can be a bit hit and miss. It can be very slow, but the opportunity to catch one of those trophy barramundi, you know, makes up for those hours and hours of casting.
Oh, tell me about it. When you're sort of casting and casting, you're casting and you love the idea that you could catch something, but just the chance of catching something that big, I'll cast all day and for weeks just to have that opportunity. So all fingers are crossed. But you must tell me how Glenbourne is going, because I'm looking forward to hopefully doing one of the tournaments up there this year. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what's happening at Glenbourne as well.
We're speaking with Nadia Taylor, the Barra Prentice, who is just hooked on fishing after winning that wonderful experience up there in the secret women's business Barra tournament, where the women do it all. They drive the boats, they tie the knots, they do everything. And we were talking about this the other day, how sometimes men really do get in the way. You want the entire experience. You don't mind the mistakes as a new angler. That's how you learn. And keeping the blokes from doing everything is hard to do. They're trying to do the right thing, but it's a pain, really, isn't it?
Well, I have to, you know, my husband really helped at the start, you know, because I was keen, but you know, he just wanted to help and just, you know, get me fishing as quickly as possible. But now I do all the stuff on the boat, to be honest. I you know, when we are on a boat, I'm tying all the knots. I'm making sure I'm definitely backing the trailer. That's one of my favourite things to do. And I'll always have a group of guys looking, saying, oh, you know, that girl's backing a trailer. Is she going to do it right? And I take great joy.
Pressure. That's hard enough at the best of times when they're lined up at the boat ramp and you've got to get it in. What about fishing closer to home? I know you love the Hawkesbury and you love the Georges, the Georges River. You do a lot of land-based stuff at the Georges River, which is just down the road from where you live.
Exactly.
What are some of your experiences there? Mulloway, they're certainly a land-based target in the Georges. Luderick, particularly in wintertime, are a great land-based target in the Georges, aren't they?
They are, both. We just enjoy being out. And so land-based fishing is one of those things that a lot of people just think you have to have a boat. You know, you have to have a boat, go out and sort of catch fish. We just love being on the edges because that's also where, you know, fish are hanging out. They're looking for structure and edges and things like that. And we just love going out and seeing what happens. You know, sometimes with, you know, fishing for jewfish, you're not always lucky. You may not catch sort of monsters, but you do catch fish. And I do. We just love going out and being outdoors and doing that in both the Georges and the Hawkesbury as well.
Yeah, it's wonderful. What really makes me laugh, if you're fishing, say, in the Georges River or the Hawkesbury River, and you're sort of casting out from a platform or whatever, you'll find the boats, you're trying to cast out, they'll come in and cast in. And you think,
yes,
well, you've got the whole river, you know, I've got this spot, and they'll cast in right on top of you. And you think, it's really weird.
It is.
The grass is always greener, you know.
Of course, and especially if they see you catching fish, they tend to get closer and closer.
Yeah, for sure. It's great fun. And those fisheries, so close to such a population centre, are still really good, aren't they? The Georges River, a surprising place, so all sorts of species, great whiting on the flats in there.
Oh, beautiful. No, absolutely agree with that one. I love whiting fishing. It's always so rewarding, and there's so many different options as well, you know, surface, sort of, you know, soft plastics, all that sort of thing. And they're just so much fun. They really, you know, I love fishing light tackle as well and light gear, so it's always a joy to catch them.
Have you used the surface lures for the whiting?
I have. Of course I have.
That's fun, isn't it?
I like having options.
What's your favourite there? What do you like doing?
Oh, well, I sort of like to sort of skid. There's a couple of options, actually. I actually like putting unweighted sort of soft plastic, so I sort of skim them across the surface.
Yeah, those Berkeley prawns unweighted. The whiting just cannot get enough of those, can they?
They cannot. So always if there's an option for soft plastics, I'm there. Mm.
And you've got to keep it moving because it'll sink too. I think that's...
Definitely.
And they do like it on the top. That's what the natural prawns do. And you've just got to keep it moving to keep it skipping across the top. I caught my biggest whiting using one of those soft plastic prawns.
There were actually some resin big heads as well that I've sort of staved. I don't know if they have them on the market anymore, but there were some resin jig heads that I have for such an occasion that I pull out if we're
wanting. Oh, that's clever. Yes, that's very natural, isn't it? The clear resin jig head on the prawn. And that's very exciting fishing, isn't it?
It is, because it's all visual, you know, and that's the whole point of, you know, when you are fishing sort of the pelagics and sort of using poppers and all that sort of stuff, that's why it's so rewarding, because you get to see the take. And that's a sort of similar thing with whiting fishing on the surface. Cast it out, you can have a look at it. I always try and imagine on the fish how I want to chase something. And that's how we do it, and we just have fun.
And it's a cheap option too, because some of the Benback surface lures, they can be over $30, the Japanese ones, closer to $40. You know, poppers are $15 to $20. The walking the dog lures aren't cheap either. So using the old plastic skipping prawn is as good as anything, I think. I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Although I do like walking the dog, that wind, flick, you know, the wrist action makes it walk is very enticing to the whiting.
It is. You've got to sort of excite them a little bit, and they do like a little bit of a chase. You know, they don't like something.
Now, you've got to keep it moving, haven't you? You've got to keep it going, which is the opposite of the brim, because if you get a brim hit and they miss, then you've got to stop it. But the wider you don't, so you've got to be able to work out what's what. And plenty of room in the Georges River for that sort of fishing?
Oh, definitely. I always sort of say to people who aren't into sort of fishing as sort of, you know, hardcore as me, and I suppose, is just go out there and have a go. If somewhere looks a bit fishy, always look for somewhere with a bit of structure. You know, if you're going to be doing the shallows, look for whiting. You know, they usually hang around, or, you know, if you're in more sort of salty, sort of, or, you know, estuary type things, always around brim, around even a wharf or anything like that. You can just go and have an easy flick and use really light gear and have a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's great. You've got miles of flats there to walk around the sailing club and other places, where it's just watch out for the stingray, shuffle your feet. There's a tip, but you know, and it's so easy too, isn't it? You've got a rod, a little packet of lures, and that's all you need.
That is, and it's a good thing to do with, especially with, you know, the situation with COVID and all this sort of thing. You take the kids out, you take your friends out, you go out there, you know, and have a ball of a day on the flats, you know, and like you said, just watch out for those. Right.
Yeah, I find if you walk by just shuffling your feet forward, if you're worried about them, that tends to stop them from bringing the tail up and arcing and driving down with the tail, which can get you in the shin or the foot and slice you open. It's a very nasty thing. But, you know, that's the only danger, really. I don't think there's anything else you'd have to worry about.
Mate. No, well, great tip. Thank you for that.
There you go. Yes. One from experience. I did get hit at Southwest Rocks and ended up in the hospital. It wasn't good. So always do that. That's such fun. I mean, and that's so accessible and easy, isn't it? I mean, mucking around, launching boats and all the rest of it. And that's where the whiting live too, isn't it? That's their habitat.
Absolutely it is. And that's the good thing about it. People think, oh, well, we have to have a boat to fish. You have to go out and fish. And look, don't get me wrong. I love fishing on a boat, you know, and I have good fun times with my mates on boats. But equally so, I've had some really, really beautiful memorable times on the flats and having a cast and just enjoying being closer to nature almost, because, you know, you're in the water, you're sort of feeling all at one, and sometimes you get lucky and catch some big ones too.
Yeah, there's some good-sized whiting in Georges River. If you're one of our northern beaches listeners, Narrabeen Lake is just fantastic. It really is a great place to do what we're talking about, throwing some surface lures for whiting. It's very surprising, or surface flies if you're that way inclined, that they work okay too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've had a little bit of experience fly fishing, i.e. you know, we did we tried to do a bit of a course, you know, and we did that down sort of south. I'm just trying to think of the place now. But it was fantastic. It was a fantastic experience to have a little bit of experience fly fishing. My hubby was really lucky catching a trout on fly. But I haven't given a go for whiting on fly, but I hear they go very well.
Yeah, same sort of technique, just a little prawn fly and keep it going, mm-hmm. You know, keep it on the surface and they'll suck it in. You can even hear them slurping at it, which is really exciting. But those coastal lagoons work really well around Narrabeen Lakes there. That's a spot that you can try out for our northern beaches listeners. And then all of those lakes and lagoons as we head down the south coast too, they're really, really good spots for it. So many options, so little time, Nadia. Ah.
I could talk about whiting all day.
Yeah, well, you have a great weekend. Thanks so much for joining us. And we definitely need a report from Mondurin when you go up there and let us know.
Oh, pleasure. I mean, my absolute pleasure. I cannot wait. So I'll be hopefully telling you that I've got a big barra and I'll take a big pic as well for the show.
Yeah, that's great. And it's not as far to go as some of the other Queensland impoundments, sort of up above Fraser Island, I guess, you know, just up from the Sunshine Coast. So still
exactly.
Fair haul,
it's very accessible, and of course we can cross the border now, so it's really lovely, and it'll be a very magical place, I'm sure. Mm.
And 99% of that's catch and release too.
It is.
People let them go, that they're not so great to eat in weedy environments like that. They're very nice out of the salt, but they're better to let the big girls go. Tight lines, Nadia Taylor.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Scott. We muchly appreciate talking to you today.
Good to talk to you.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Peter LeBlanc is a real pioneer of downrigging for kingfish with live baits, with squid particularly, freshly caught local squid. The kingfish just can't resist. And Peter, it's been a long time since we've spoken about this, and a lot of people are doing it, and maybe they're doing it wrong, although there's no wrong way or right way. There's only the way that the fish like, but you really cut your teeth on this, didn't you? And it was a technique that was taken from the Great Lakes of Canada. It was something that they did over there in freshwater for lake trout and other big freshwater predatory fish that I guess were the kingfish of those giant waterways. But you refined it, didn't you? Take us back to when you first started to use the giant bomb, the lead bomb and the wire and the release clips and the downrigger.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, well, I mean, I was lucky enough, like you said, we'd had people do it before in the freshwater, so it was just a matter of adapting it. So, you know, we took off all of the wire and what have you, and we put on 200-pound braid. That stopped a lot of the humming for us. And then we started using the shark bombs. They were the original ones that we used to get from Canada. That used to come over, the big flashy silver ones. And they had facets all cut out of them, so it made it so that it was a sound of bait fish, basically.
And that flash of attraction, which just the kingfish is just so curious, aren't they? What about the terminal tackle? What about the rig itself? What have you stuck to that's been the most tried and true?
Mate, I came up with that two-hook rig with the treble in the back, so that, well, the bottom, well, that's like a stinger hook. So basically, the top hook is bound. It's got a tube, and it's actually bound to it like a fishing guide is bound to a rod.
Yeah, and so you do that knot that holds it in place up the line.
Yeah, well, that actually makes it so that you can adjust it too. So you get some slack, and as long as you've got an inline circle, an inline hook, you can make it so that it has to go through in such a way that it's not going to let go.
Yeah, like your snooded hook.
Yes, red. Yeah. Very, very similar, yes. And then putting that treble down in the bottom of it and, you know, worked out over the years that when you turn the squid over where its nose is, you've got those two tentacles just below that, and if you put them just between those two tentacles there and just stab it up into the squid, you've got the perfect spot for it to actually sit, and it doesn't affect the squid too much. And you can basically downrig them around at 1 to 2 knots and they stay alive.
There you go. And the same with the bait fish that you might downrig.
Yeah, well, the bait fish were basically we adapted just the bridle rigging, really, from the game fishing side of things when I used to do a lot of game fishing. So That's just making it so that the hook is presented in the right spot of the head. And again, if you've got the bait stitched on the right way, it's going to last a long time.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of people can look that up, how to bridle rig a live bait with a one or two hook rig. You usually use a one hook rig with that, do you?
Yeah, that's right. Normally we're using the Mustard's, you know, 5.0s, 6.0s or 7.0s, the hoodlum hooks. So they're in line, so they don't, they're not one that's going to make it spin with an offset.
And they're just off the nose and held on by the twine sort of thing, or the thread?
Yes, they're actually gone. It's just in the front of the eye where it actually goes. And
some people insert a little tiny zip tie too for that.
Yeah, that's right. But with all the people and everyone worrying about plastics in the ocean and stuff nowadays, yeah. we try to do it the long way now.
The natural needle and thread, yes. It's not going to be a pollutant. And what about speed? You know, a lot of people would wonder how fast you could go or should go when you're downrigging a live bait. And you don't need, just before we get to the speed, you don't need all of that gear, the very expensive downrigger that tells you the depth and all that. Many people will just use a couple of snapper leads, won't they?
Yeah, that's right, the poor man's downrigger. You attach the, like you say, a snapper sinker, so 6 ounce or 8 ounce, depending on the currents and stuff that you're actually in. And you attach that normally with a rubber band to your swivel. And by doing it that way there, you can just lower it down so it's out of sight, get someone to put it into the boat into gear for you, and providing that stays just out of sight, you know, you're in with a chance and you travel around it at that depth. The thing that downrigging actually does for you, of course, is that you can actually see the bombs or the weights a lot of the time actually on the sounder. So you can be very accurate once you start seeing the bait fish show up at a certain depth. You can actually drop those baits down to that depth.
That's right. If you're using the poor man's downrigger, you could actually see those snapper leads on your chart and then drop them down to the depth that you see the fish marks at.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And what about speed? What sort of speed would you troll at?
Normally we're travelling with the squid, for instance, less than 2 knots. We found that, you know, once you start going over 2 knots, the squid start to basically drown. They're just getting towed around all over the place. They don't enjoy that at all. So, you know, less than 2 knots is the way to go. And then once you get in the yellowtail or slimy mackerel, you can actually downrig up to about 4 knots or 5 knots if you wish. But the yellowtail, once again, if you've got that, you know, 2 knots or around that kind of speed, you're going to find that they're going to last quite a while. But when you're starting to use those kind of fish baits, you pull them up every 15 minutes type of thing to see how lively they are, and most of the time you're changing them over for a more lively bait.
Mm. And what about stopping? You know, can you actually, if you see fish and they're not taking it, can you stop altogether and just fish it static?
Yeah, well, quite often what we'll do is that, you know, we've got the scent bottle that we actually put off our downriggers and what have you as well, so that hopefully gets these fish that aren't quite in the mood to actually get into the mood so that, you know, you have a chance.
But I forgot about that. So you'll pour some of that fish attractant, some of those pheromone-based things and other secret sources directly onto the bomb?
We'll actually attach it in a sauce bottle that's full of foam, so like a sponge, I should say, not foam.
Yeah, right.
And that absorbs it, and then you've got holes in the actual bottle itself, so that'll disperse.
Very clever, and that stays attached to the bomb.
That stays attached to the bomb just off a short lead, and, you know, it gets it so that makes it puts out a good trail. So, you know, tuna oils or, you know, any of those kind of, like you said, pheromone kind of things will work quite well. And then if that doesn't work after you've done all that, well, then you get your baits down to the right depth with the downrigger, and you know that the fish are there on the sounder. And then basically what you do is you load up the rod and you snap the rubber band that it's attached with, and your bait is down there at that correct depth straight away. And then you can do the free spooling and just let it sit down there where the fish actually are and swim around as you know, if you've got an electric motor on the front, you can just hold spot and let it travel all around the place until you hook up. Otherwise, you can do what we do is, and that's drift through and, you know, we'll do it 2 or 3 times by dropping it down there, snapping them off the rubber band, letting them sit there and seeing if we can get them active that way.
Yeah, very effective method and something that you really pioneered. A few people are doing it now, but it's been a great journey with you, Peter, following your success, attempting these very, very very big fish on this method and getting it down to where they are. Hey, tight lines, mate. Thanks for sharing the secrets. You're very, very open and honest.
Thank you, mate. No, it's been a pleasure.
On ABC Radio, it's The Big Fish with Scott Levi.
Oh, get out of it, bloody seagulls.
On ABC Radio, it's The Big Fish with Scott Levi.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
And this morning on The Big Fish with Stinker, a breakthrough in the case of the kilo whiting. We have evidence, very well-supported evidence, to suggest that it's true. Good morning,
well,
Stinker.
G'day, Scott. Well, yes, I think it's a skeptic in me that even when I'm showing some degree of fact, I'm still, you know, I'm a little bit hesitant. But let me tell you what I learnt. I got a tremendous look. The people that email me, thank you for the emails. They're just wonderful, and I reply to all of them. I got one from Jeff Clark, which I found very interesting. And Jeff tells me that the ANSWER records show that in Lake Macquarie in April 2007, Mel Marlborough, who was a member of the Canberra Fishing Club, caught a whiting. It doesn't say what sort of whiting. It's caught a whiting that went 1.15 kg. Now, there you go, a 1 kilo whiting. However, ANSWER don't stipulate what sort of whiting it was.
Well, we're talking about a yellowfin whiting, aren't we?
Yeah, well, that's what we're talking about. But it has been rumoured that there have been King George whiting occasionally in Lake Macquarie. Now, I don't know anything about that. So really, as far as I'm concerned, Scott, the jury is still out. Unless Miss Mel Marlborough can give us a call. Does our program go to Canberra?
Yeah, I think it does, Stinker. It certainly goes to all of regional New South Wales and Sydney. So, Mel, if you're listening or someone who knows Mel, jump on the line and give us a call or send Stinker an email at?
At stinkerfishing@yahoo.com. Always happy to hear from our listeners.
And Mel,
all the emails I get are really positive. Gee, it's great. There's such a positive feeling in there out there amongst the fishing community.
Well, Mel Marlborough's the man in the record book, and they have to be well substantiated, those records. And Lake Macquarie, a kilo plus whiting. It didn't say that it was a yellowfin whiting, so the jury's still out a little bit, and I've never heard of and I grew up on Lake Macquarie, and dear old Mullet Gut Vic, who you know well, has fished there, my dad, for 60 years, so we did have a 63-centimetre whiting caught off Balambi Point by one of our listeners a few years ago. It was a monster of a thing. I don't know how much that would have weighed. It probably weighed about 3 kilos or something. It was a huge whiting. That was a King George whiting.
Oh,
so they do.
I was just going to say, 63 centimetres, and oh, golly, it's getting bigger and bigger.
It was 63 centimetres. We had a photo of it. We had irrefutable proof with a tape measure, and yeah, it was caught off Balambi Point, which is a nice little surfing spot at Wollongong, caught out at sea on one of the close-in reef systems, and we know they're in big numbers down on the south coast in Lakes Entrance and down on the Victorian border, but it's a long way north for them. In saying that, though, I'm fishing there tomorrow with Maddie, Dogfish Dave and Botany Bay Bernie on Moonglow, Maddie's little boat. And you will see them on the flats there. They're very hard to catch. They've all got PhDs. You know, they eat the little squirt worms and they're keyed in on those and they're very difficult to fool. But you'll see them come up under the boat. You'll see many over 40. I mean, there are a lot of whiting in there now since it became a recreational fishing haven. And, you know, they're just hard to catch, Stinker. They're a great challenge.
Well, good luck. Well, it sounds like you might need a very big bag.
Well, you might see 100 and catch 10 if you're really lucky. You know, that's going really well. They're quite a... They've so keyed in on the little squirt worms that they hoover out of the sand that they're very hard to interest unless you've got live blood worms or those ones they're growing at Dora Creek now, that the tube worms or even beach worms will work on them too. So they do love those marine worms.
Well, measure your best one and tell us next week. It'll be very exciting.
All right, gee, the pressure's on now, boys. The pressure's on now. But, yeah, we'd love to hear from Mel. And there are some huge whiting there. There really are. And the recreational anglers aren't making too much of a dent in them. Live prawns, like live nippers, work as well at night. But they're very fussy. They're very finicky there in the sandy parts of the waterway. So you never know. You never know. There could be a kilo one lurking there as we speak.
Well, now, look, I'd like to tell you about a young fellow. He's only, I don't know, he's 13 or 14 years old, young Archie, and he's the grandson of my neighbour. Anyway, he saw me last October, and he said, "Oh, Stinker," he said, "I love to go fishing in Stinkpot." He said, "Is there any chance we could go one day?" And I didn't, of course. I said, look, because of COVID and everything else, and there was bad weather, I said, I'll tell you what. And I was going away too. I said, when February's the best weather, because I've been so concerned about safety, I would never take anybody fishing where I go, really, because it's just too dodgy. So a young bloke, I'll just take him in the bay somewhere. But I said, I'll take you when it comes to February. The 1st of February, there's a knock on the door. He said, "It's February." Right. Yeah, okay.
So he's been marking the days off his calendar till the 1st of February.
I don't know what it's like where you are, but where we are here in Port Stephens, the weather's been ordinary.
Well, last week, Stinker, this is how bad the weather has been on the East Coast, particularly around our area, just north of Sydney. Last week, Wednesday and Thursday last week, the Bureau of Meteorology told me were the first two consecutive sunny days this year.
Yep, that's what I've experienced. So, poor Archie, I've said, yes, we're definitely going. It's locked in. There's no, and there's still a bit of February to go, so don't panic. But I've just got to wait for the right conditions, and hopefully that might be early next week. And see, you also got to go to school, so you've got to wait from after school. And the wind generally picks up in the afternoon, so, oh, dear, this is becoming quite a challenge. Anyway, that's good. I really enjoy seeing kids enjoying fishing. And some of them are totally focused on fishing. I mean, this young fellow with his mates, he's got a heap of mates, and they go and sit on the jetty and they dangle lines there and, tie their hooks. And look, it's just great to see. Sort of reminds me of what I was like as a kid.
Yeah, it's wonderful to see, isn't it, the next generation coming through. And all they need is a little bit of a helping hand.
That's right.
And they want to do it on their own too, don't they? We were speaking to Nadia Taylor earlier on in this program, aptly named Nadia Taylor, who is a woman obsessed with fishing, and she doesn't want blokes backing the trailer and tying the hooks on. She wants the whole experience, the whole adventure, and all you need to do is show people. The old teach a person to fish and they'll have fish forever. You know, they want to enjoy the whole experience, don't they?
A bit of support and encouragement, and then a bit of positive reward, and they're set for life. That's it. It's a very simple recipe. Scott, I'd like to tell you a story. I was out in the back of the port through the week and a couple of mud crab traps out there. And then I was up at Tweed recently and I walked along the banks of the Eucary Bar Passage. Now, the Eucary Bar Passage branch off the Tweed River that runs around a mangrove, a beautiful island, and it has got no residents on it, no development. It's one of the very few places that haven't been developed in the Tweed, and that's where I used to live on the other, not on the island, but on the other side. Anyway, it brought back a memory of a story that when I was a bit older than Archie is now, I was very fortunate enough to be selected to go to Sydney to play cricket. Well, at the time, I had two crab traps in the channel. And I said to my mother, I said, oh, look, I'll go and pull the crab traps out. And then I'll just put them on the, you know, put them in the garage and I'll reset them when I come back from Sydney. And she said, no, no, she said, set them out there again. And she said, I'll get Tommy Parsons down the river, down the lake, to look after the traps while you're gone. Well, my mother was unaware that old Tommy, who was a South Sea Islander, he had a shack along the Euclid Bar Passage. He'd sit in that shack. He had one eye, I remember. And things like that you'll never forget.
No, you don't. There
with his legs crossed, untangling his net and smoking. And he was a fascinating bloke, and I never really ever spoke to him. But Claudie McDermott, an Aboriginal fellow and I, on who also lived on the channel, and so Claudie McDermott and I, in the darkness of night, would lift the traps, Tommy's traps and our own traps, and Tommy, I know, would lift my traps. But I never caught him. He never caught me, and I never caught him. And that was a sort of the arrangement. That's what still happens, unfortunately, with crabbing. So now my mother has said that Tommy can look after my traps while I'm gone. And anyway, I said, oh, gee, I said, Mum, I must tell you, but Tommy's been knocking off my traps for years. And she said, well, that's what we're going to do. We're going to go down there and you're going to ask Tommy to look after your traps. So down I went, and that was the first time I ever spoke to Tom. And I said, Tommy, I'm going to Sydney for a week. Would you please look after my traps? Well, you can imagine he was pretty surprised. He was pretty surprised when I asked him. And he sort of said, yes, he said, I'll do that. I'll do that. So off I went to Sydney and I came back a week later. And there were all these beautiful crabs that had been cooked and given to our house. And my mother said, oh, Tommy's been around giving us all these crabs.
Oh.
I said, oh, how wonderful. She said, now you go down there and take him a carton of Rothmans Blue cigarettes and thank him for what he's done. And you know what? I did that. And he was very thankful. And neither of us checked each other's traps ever again.
Oh, what
a great story,
reaching out. That's a great story, Stinky. You're full of them. Hey, we'll catch you next week on The Big Fish.
Hurry, Scott.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Cole, the Waymaster Trenorman, has a fishing report for the Mid-North Coast and the North Coast, the offshore, estuary and rock scene, and even the freshwater scene. Good morning, Treno.
Morning, Scotty. How are we?
Yeah, going well, Waymaster. And where do we start? Well, we start with what you've been doing this week. You've been catch and release on big lizards, I believe.
Yeah, I've been chasing a few of the big girls. Mate, I haven't managed to land any of the real big buggers, although there was a young fella landed a nice one through the week. It was 98.5-centimetre crocodile there in the river, so and released it. Watched a video of it there yesterday, and it was quite a good effort.
There's some good ones in that river. I never forget the fellow who went down with 6-pound line and some nippers down on the Camden Haven and pulled a 20-pounder.
Yeah, 22-pounder, I think. It went 22.5-pounder. It was a monster.
And being the Waymaster, you had the official club scales and you put it on. It was right on the knocker, wasn't it? 22-pound. Let her go to swim away.
Yeah, no, that was Dave Eames, his name, wasn't he? He actually sat with the fish for about half an hour until it could actually swim away. He just didn't want to dump it and run, but he actually sat there until it was well over chest deep and watched it swim away out into the deep water.
He gave it CPR.
Yeah, or LPR, lizard resuscitation.
Lizard resuscitation. It's great that people look after these big girls because we're reaping the rewards, aren't we? What about table size flathead in our rivers of the mid-north coast? And there's such great habitat there on the Nambucca, you know, right up to the Tweed, Ballina, right down. I mean, that Richmond River, those sand flats there are just Flathead Haven, your river, the Camden Haven, it's full of great flathead habitat. I mean, they're coming on, aren't they? And they're breeding in big numbers now.
They are, mate. Listen, I tell you what, I've got a question for you before I get into that one. Mate, have you heard any more about the slot size?
No.
I believe that the slot size will be in line with Queensland and Victoria. That's 40 to 60 centimetre slot size, and everything under's got to go back and everything over's got to go back.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, there'd be scientific evidence for that, I believe. What are the recreational anglers saying about it? Are they on board with that?
No, there's a lot for it, mate. There's a lot of boys that are for it. They say, well, there's a lot of blokes that let everything over 60 go anyway.
So I'm
one of them as well. Like, if I want to feed a flatties, mate, I look at, say, a 45 to a 50, and that's a good feed. You know, you get half a dozen of those, and that's a big feed.
Yeah, so they're in favour of letting them go over 60, because at the moment it's over 70, isn't it?
That's correct. I had a gentleman in the shop the other day trying to tell me that the slot size was 36 to 70, and I said, no, that's the current size, mate, with one over 70. So hopefully he's listening, he'll hear that. But, argued quite adamantly about it. But anyway, so I'm hoping that they bring it in. I think Steve Starlin's all over it, like a young kid on a lollipop. So.
All right. Yeah, well, there's obviously evidence there. If Queensland and Victoria are doing that, they do it because the scientists have said this is the best way to protect the species, and the slot limit idea is one that's used around the world in fisheries management. The good thing about rod and line fishing, it's very manageable. You know, we're crying out for the resources to be protected, and we can have our cake and eat it too, or in this case, our flathead and eat it too. So they're on at the moment. They're on in big numbers. What are your techniques for targeting the trophy ones or catching a feed?
Well, I've got a bit of a thing at the moment. I've gone away from the surface lures because there was a lot of throwing for very little result. Although when I say very little result, there was still a result, but it was slow coming. I've been using big glide plastics now, and I've had great success with that. And just fine tuning the rigging on them at the moment.
What sort of plastics are they?
Oh, they're a long stick bait sort of stick plastic. They're a very long, like up to 12 inches long,
like a sluggo sort of thing.
That's exactly what they are, mate. Without giving it away too much.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Them ones, Silstar make a nice one, which is called a slapstick.
Yeah, the white ones, the white ones, or a different colour.
Doesn't matter what colour at the moment. Pink's be probably the pick.
There'd be a lot of people who would use paddle tails or grub tails because they'd see those and think, there's no action. How do you impart an action to something that's just a straight piece of rubber?
Well, the beauty about it and what I've learned is it's patience. You slow everything right down and you just throw it, and it's gliding more than anything. It's the actual flicking of it up. You don't bash it hard. You just raise the rod nice and slowly and then just leave it slack and it'll glide down. You can actually feel it whack it.
So do you think that's simulating something diving for the bottom to get out of the way of predators?
Well, I reckon it could be anything from a gharry on its last legs to a mullet doing the last limbo dance.
And I guess being a large soft plastic too, these big girls, they're probably not going to come off the bottom for one of those little vibes or something that small. They want a good mouthful, don't they? They want to swallow a 10-inch mullet or a garfish or something.
Well, that's correct. The other one that's been working well too is a soft vibe, but it's one that's got a hidden hook. I can't give the brand away, but it's a fish trap. There you go.
So you can fish that into the bottom without snagging up.
That's right. It's got a hook that sits inside of it, and you can fish that through the heavy stuff. And when they bite down on hooks exposed, and it's similar to a weedless hook, but it's the other way around.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Down.
That's a great idea, isn't it? Because then you can fish around the edges of the weed bed, which is where they hang. I mean, particularly on the run-out tide, if you've got an extensive weed system and a drop-off on the edge of that weed bed, dynamite, absolute dynamite. It's the Big Fish. We're speaking with Trenno, our man on the mid-north coast and north coast. So that's the river scene, the estuary scene. The flathead are playing the game on some of those fantastic soft plastics. What about up in the fresh? Anything doing there?
Oh, mate, yes, there has been. Even though the water's like a really, really bad cup of coffee with floaty bits in it and everything, there has been a few bass, believe it or not. I had a friend of mine went up to the Macleay before that last lot of rain, which was 160 mil, just for your records. He was up there, and they got him and his mate got, I think it was 42 fish between them, on all on surface.
Fantastic fishing. Obviously, everyone released.
Oh, yeah, mate. Look, bass are too good to catch once. I mean, look, fair enough. You're allowed to keep two for a feed if you want. And if that pleases you, mate,
I can't eat river bass. I mean, they taste too weedy for my taste. I know some of the old timers.
That's why they put them in impoundments, mate, so you can take them.
Yeah, even in there, they don't taste great. I'd rather let them go. They're great fish. All right, and the rock and beach scene, anything happening there?
Few snapper coming off the stones. Mate of mine got his PB there the other week, a 68, or I think it was.
Gee, that's a nice fish off the rocks, isn't it? And that would mean they'd be on the inshore reef systems for the conventional boat snapper fishers as well.
Correct, mate, correct. And there's the M word's out about again.
The mackerel. Holy mackerel.
Mackerel, yeah, mate.
Oh, that gets them all excited. They are wonderful fish, aren't they? Be careful, though, as we reported on in previous episodes, when you do get those fish that are well over, 20, they can be well over 30 kilos, they're ones to share around. They do have a tendency to accumulate the Ciguatura toxin, so got to be careful there. And where are the hotspots for the mighty Spanish mackerel at the moment?
Well, the usual ones, which is Hathead, Plummer, Barry's Bay, I should say, Point Plummer, down off Laurieton here at Grand's Head, or down at Mermaids, mate. There was quite a few boats out the other day when you could finally get out. There was quite a few boats out up and down in there. The water is nice blue colour and about that 23, 24 degrees with a bit of current in it, I believe.
And the good thing is, if you're going somewhere to do a bit of reef fishing or whatever, you can just go a little slower. Not that slow, because they do like a quick troll and put out a big Smith's jig or some cheap lure, because they'll bite them in half, and a bit of wire, and Bob's your uncle.
Bob's your uncle and Jane's your auntie. That's right, mate.
Or you can anchor up or drift for them too. What are your techniques if you're doing that?
Oh, mate, I'm a bit of a fan of the old sit back and just feed a live bait back to them, put one down on a Dan Rigger and one up just swimming madly. The only problem is the sharks have pretty much tuned in, and they reckon sharks are they're a very smart animal, mate. They know when the fish is hooked. A friend of mine was up in Barry's Bay there about 3-4 weeks ago, and his wife had the biggest cove on that they've ever seen, and it came to the boat, or close to the boat, twice, and he said to his missus, he said, look, take it easy, we'll get him in, I'll get him on the next pass. And he said this white, great white come and grabbed it. He said would have been about 4.5 metres.
Wonderful part of the world you live in. To all of our listeners on the mid-north coast and north coast of New South Wales, tight lines. Trenno, you've done it again. I'll let you get down to the tackle shop and tell people where they're biting.
I'll tell them where to go, all right, mate.
Not your secret spot.
No, that's right, mate.
Hooray, mate.
See you, champion.
Thank you. jewfish sleeps tonight. In the river, the mighty river, the jewfish sleeps tonight.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listener.